That's too late. No, now it feels weird. No, now the transition's all off. Anyways.
Let's go, guys.
So today I made a patient for Laura, and not physically. I wrote out a patient for Laura to eval. No, I lied. I came up partially with an evaluation for Laura to tell me how she would treat this patient. His name is John. John Doe.
Well, you named him halfway through our episode, but yes.
No, I named him almost at the end of our episode.
But we're going to dive into it. You guys will hear kind of a lot on it, but I don't know. I find it very fascinating.
I think it's also because we haven't truly treated this patient population, so we kind of just threw everything out there.
Yeah, and well, and it's a very unique one.
Very unique.
It's not one that you are going to progress like normal.
P.S. We will mention the whole Duchenne's naming, kind of going away from people's name thing. However, there are multiple different kinds of muscular dystrophies. Mm-hmm. We don't mention that coming up, but just keep that in mind. This one's specifically Duchenne's muscular dystrophy.
Yeah, but from what we've also heard too is they're getting rid of the Duchenne, so just be aware of that. Mainly we'll address probably as muscular dystrophy throughout this.
Okay, so this is a long intro. Let's get into it.
Let's go.
The PTA Podcast with your hosts, Ken.
And Laura. Thanks again for joining for another exciting episode. All right, let's dive into it.
Let's get started.
So, like we talked about kind of last time we had Ken do it, Ken has kind of written up an eval for me to look over.
How the tables have turned.
Exactly. This should be interesting. But so he wrote it up for me. He kind of cheated. Wow. In all fairness, mine was purely...
Yours was a few range of motion values and a couple strength values.
I gave you a full history of the patient, too.
I was worried about everything else. I have also never have treated this kind of patient, so it makes it very difficult to just make things up.
So Ken did kind of reference back to his school, which is a great thing that you have some of those documents.
That's not what she was telling me off air.
No, I was saying he cheated.
Yeah.
Because the whole goal is to make the evals for each other. It's kind of nice because you get to change
things up a little bit.
Yeah, but like as you're making the evals, you get to learn about it too, like really like in depth a little bit more, I feel like. Because you're like, okay, what can I throw in there? What should be in there? What should I be looking for this one in particular?
It almost just made me think about my case study a little bit more.
Yeah.
From school. I'm like, oh yeah.
So you kind of went a little bit off your case study, but changed some stuff. So we'll go ahead and have Ken read out the evals and then any point you want me to answer or something. If not, I can do it more towards the end.
It doesn't matter. I mean, I'll kind of just keep reading it off. And if you want to stop me at some point and kind of, I'm just going to read it out. Mm-hmm. And then if you want to just kind of things that you picked up along the way when you read it, you can just go ahead and stop me at any point.
Sounds good.
So the patient, how we mentioned in the intro, the patient, it has Duchenne's muscular dystrophy. Mm-hmm. I have never personally worked with this kind of patient population, so all of this is new to me. I'm going to almost honestly just go strictly off of what my textbook says versus real life experiences.
Yeah. On a side note, too, I don't think we mentioned this in the intro, but they're getting rid of the Duchenne's part.
And they don't want to have any more names.
Muscular dystrophy.
Like
so
Parkinson's disease. They don't want to.
Exactly.
They don't want to have names anymore.
FYI, if you kind of hear them, they might be interchangeable for a while.
It's
going
to take so long to change it.
So I just wanted to throw that in before I forgot.
So Laura's patient is 8 years old. He mm-hmm. demonstrates with a respiratory rate of 20 beats per minute with advantageous breath sounds. His diaphragm strength is considered fair. As far as his active and passive range of motion, they're all within functional limits, except his hip extensors are lacking 15 degrees, and his dorsiflexors are lacking 10 degrees. Mm-hmm. Going into manual muscle testing.
I guess before we get into that, like right off the bat, like 8 years old, I can tell you it's a male. Male are the only ones who can have muscular dystrophy.
I didn't want to give him a name.
Yeah. So, but like, I'm just saying, like, it has to be a male patient. females can be carriers of the gene. However, they are not affected by the gene. When it comes to respiratory rates, does not surprise me because of the fact that your diaphragm, of course, muscles control your breathing. And as those start to get weak, your breathing becomes a little bit harder to do. In some cases, it will also slow down dramatically, too. Or they'll be a lot more shallow, too. It can just vary. But with the respiratory stuff, it's something to be aware of. If they're not doing respiratory therapy already, you know, I would talk to my supervising physical therapist to get them into respiratory therapy also, because it plays a key component. For us on our end, that's just something to be aware of, and we can just work on breathing exercises at the same time as actual exercises. But for the gross range of motion, passive and active range of motion, to me, right off the bat, when I'm seeing the minus 15 degrees hip flexion and the 10 degrees of dorsiflexion, I'm thinking he's already starting to have contractures. That is something very common with muscular dystrophy, and it's usually flexion tractures that they have. And then for where everything just kind of like curls into the body in a way. So that doesn't, I'm not surprised by that, but as we get down a little bit farther, I can see it already. Like with his range of motion, that's why I'm leaning more towards he's having contractures.
As far as, do you want me to add my little tidbits, or do you want to just kind of do your thing and then I'll kind of add it?
No, you can add it.
Okay. I was just curious.
Oh, yeah, no,
I had some, but then I lost it.
Yeah, brain fart too.
Well, it's just kind of about like the diaphragm too. Like it's, we kind of talked about it a little bit before we started. It was the whole, like, the average lifespan. Mm-hmm. And it's usually because at the very end, the diaphragm usually is what gives out. Yeah,
the diaphragm or the heart.
Yeah, so, like, that kind of core, not core musculature, but, like, trunk musculature.
Yeah, I'm like, it's really the diaphragm musculature.
Kind of just there's like no your trunk. That's what kind of goes last. Yeah. And it's really important if you can address it early on. Keep them nice and strong. So I'm going to ask Laura how she would strengthen that a little later on, but we'll get there.
So pretty much it starts in your larger gross muscles in your limbs. And so then it moves inwards where it affects more of the heart, more your diaphragm. And that's why, like you were saying, that usually is what leads to death, unfortunately. I have no way of like saying it, unfortunately.
It's a very brutal pathology, unfortunately.
It's a tough one because like we were talking about too, is it doesn't have an up. There's no upside to it.
It's more like controlling the descent.
Exactly. And the sooner you can catch it and the sooner you can kind of like start working on some of this stuff, then you're going to see that progress slower. But honestly, by the time they hit between 10 and 12, it's very tough. And we'll go into that a little bit more. But so that's why, like, 8 years old for this kid, I know he's not quite there, but we're getting to the point where we're going to start to see things really decline in a couple of years, most likely.
I'll go into the manual muscle tests.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to go into the hips first. Flexors, both sides, 4 out of 5. Extensors, both sides, 3 out of 5. Abductors, both, 4 out of 5. Going over to the knee, flexors, both, 2 out of 5. Extensors, both, 5 out of 5. And then finally for the ankles, dorsiflexors within their range, because they are missing 10 degrees, 3 out of 5. And plantar flexors, 3 out of 5.
Yeah.
Any comments before I move on to?
I'm going to go with his hamstrings are very weak.
Extremely weak.
So what tells me that out of most of those muscles there that the hamstrings are weak is A, that the knee flexors are 2 out of 5. And then the knee extenders are 3 out of 5. So like I still think his glutes and everything are kind of more they're still activating pretty decently, but and that's why what his makes glutes me think, are.
Yeah,
makes me think his hamstrings are getting affected the most right now, by just kind of, you know,
from his hip extensor still being 3 out of 5.
Mm-hmm.
That his glutes are still pretty strong.
Yeah, to compensate for the knee flexors, which would kind of mainly be the hamstrings.
Yeah, I mean, I would say almost this entire posterior chain is just weaker than...
Oh, definitely.
Like, extensors are 3 compared to the anterior side, and his knee extensors are way stronger than his flexors.
Yeah, no, I totally agree on that.
Like, do you want me to go into function or keep... Okay.
No, because it's hard to talk about some of the manual muscle testing until we get into, like, the function.
So. All right. So, for functional levels... he is a tall walker.
Mm-hmm. Very commonly seen. Again.
What else could have hinted towards that?
The fact that he has minus, what was it, 10 degrees, correct?
Correct.
10 degrees of dorsiflexion, which means, again, most likely he has a contracture, which means he's not going to get full range, which means he's not going to, he's not a new, he can't, you can't get to neutral. So he's walking on his toes. There's my process of
that's how I got there too. I just want to see if you also got there the same way.
Mm-hmm.
He can ambulate about 100 feet independently. He demonstrates with increased lordosis. He has no arm swing.
Mm-hmm.
He is unable to run. As far as transfers, he can transfer from supine to sit and sit to stand all independently. And then I had
do
a little
do you want to ask your question?
Ask it now.
Yeah. That's fine. Because it kind of goes with it.
So at the end of the eval, I threw a little question for Laura for her to start thinking about as she did this little case review. I asked her if she feels like this patient would already demonstrate with Gower's sign. Why or why not?
So, yes.
But do you want to first explain what Gower's sign is?
So Gower's sign is kind of where you see them prop themselves onto a quadruped. And then they kind of walk, like they'll bring their feet in. And then they walk their arms up into an erect position, usually from the ground to standing.
This, would you still consider that independent?
Yes.
Okay. I would too.
The reason is because they're still, like, it's a modified independence, I guess, if you wanted to classify it by anything. Like, is it normally done that way? No. Does that show signs of weakness? Yes. But they're still doing it by themselves. Like, they are still able to get up and down without any help. So reasons that they'll do this too is a weakness and also balance issues. Which usually balance issues is due to weakness. So the one thing, like, to keep in mind with muscular dystrophy, it's not a neuro pathology. This is purely muscular pathology. It is where the muscle fibers do not grow due to lack of certain chemicals within the body, or proteins, I think they are. It's lack of certain proteins. And so instead of the muscle fibers growing, what happens is fat and other... connective tissues fill that space. And that's why you start to see, as they are supposed to be growing and aging, you start to see them decline instead, because as that space gets bigger, it's no longer filling in with muscle fibers. It is filling in with
that other tissue.
The other tissues.
Also, that kind of just shows a false sense of hypertrophy, because it looks like they're gaining mass. But it's actually not muscle.
Yeah.
It's fat and connective tissue.
Yeah. And so, like, a lot of times too, you'll look like they've got the mass, but they won't have the strength to back up that mass. The strength values to back up the mass.
And the reason why I asked about the Gower sign is because it's typically found in patients who have muscular dystrophy.
It's kind of one of those top things that they do look out for. So, like, for this child, I would say yes. Based off of the fact that his knee flexors are, well, really his hamstring, but his knee flexors are so weak. And then also his hip flexors or extensors, sorry, are also weak. Now, most likely, I would say he might still be able to do a good amount on his own once he gets into just having to do that trunk extension. So he could lay off the hands. They break, from what I could tell, they break Gower's kind of down into like how much they're really using of their hands to assist. You know, there's mild, which is maybe just getting up and just kind of getting going a little bit, and then everything else can take over. And then there's, you know, moderate, and then there's severe. And so like moderate, from what I could tell, was where like they would use their hands to walk up, but once they kind of got that knee extension, then if the trunk is still slightly like is still strong enough, then they would erect themselves without using their hands for the trunk. So with like the hip extensors being at 3 still, my guess is he's kind of like in between that moderate to severe stage starting to reach.
I didn't even find any, I didn't know that there's different classifications for how much they use. It's like when I looked it up, I just found like what it was and how it's defined. I didn't know there was a level of classification.
Yeah, I don't think it's like really like defined in a way as a book. It's not as important, but it's just something, yeah, they observed and they would see. And I was looking at a couple case studies as we talked about it and was looking into Gower's a little bit more.
I also agree. I feel like they would start demonstrating Gower's for the same reason. So without their knee flexors or hip extensors, they have trouble going into extension. So if you're imagining your either in quadruped or kind of in hip flexion, you don't have any muscles to help you extend.
Yeah. Well, like, and the thing is too, is like, even though like as you're standing upright, with the knee, definitely with the knee flexors not being as strong, what happens is they can overcorrect with the, or not overcorrect, but overpower and have that knee extension, which could throw them off balance. And so that's why like they kind of walk themselves up to have that like control as they're going through the movement too. Because if you think about it, like you're going really from knee flexion to extension, you're like, well, they have extension, so what's the big deal, right, for the knee? But it's the overpowering of the knee extension that could happen, and so that throws them off balance.
The way I'm picturing like is like their knees are locked out, right? So they're almost like in that a hamstring stretch position to the floor.
Yep, kind of.
And they can lock out their knees, so they are locking them out, probably a wide base of support to assist with the balance, and then just going to walk themselves up.
Yeah, kind of, yeah, pretty much. But it's like that walking themselves up is that control, too, with because they'll walk themselves up from, like, the get-go.
Yes, you can be prone.
You're not in knee start extension, yeah. You're walking up, like, from, and so it's that control, too, because if not, you think about it, like, you throw your body just, or your knees just into extension, you have no control of those knee flexors, flexion, what's going to happen to your knee? You're going to hyperextend, and you're going to lose probably your balance. There's nothing controlling to make sure your knees
are stable in a way. Yeah.
So I think that's just part of it. Like, that's just kind of like where my brain goes when I'm thinking of like the balance aspect of it a little bit. For the kid walking independently, one of the things I would want to know, like, he's ambulating 100 feet independently. Increased lordosis is very common. No arm swing, again, starts to just decrease of movement within those larger groups, so it affects the arms too, not just the legs here. So like I would have liked to see us also upper body strength in this, because it's not just the legs alone, but that's the only thing like I would say in this eval I feel like I'm missing a little bit more.
This is all you get.
I know. But and then we talked about what I felt like it was missing in yours, but also I would also like to know why was he only able to ambulate 100 feet? Was it because of the fact that he got tired? Was it because of the fact that he's fall risk? Like all different things, because these kids will become more prone to fall risk. They will become more prone to exhaustion and other things too. Pain. You have to think like there is pain from muscles compensating because other muscles don't have the full movement. So I would just kind of like to know that a little bit more. Can't run, not surprised, with the weakness that is shown definitely in the knee flexors. I would
also say because of the diaphragm being fair.
And then, yep.
He just doesn't have the endurance.
The endurance, yep. Breathing could be difficult. So there's a lot of different things that can run into treatment-wise.
Yeah, do you want to take it from the top, or are you just going to go off of function?
It's mainly going to be off of function. So, like, with the respiratory, like I already talked about.
Well, because I have questions how you would address the diaphragm strength.
So, the most likely what I would do for diaphragm is this kid needs, because of the fact that it's going to only get worse, this kid needs to really be set up with a respiratory therapist. However,
what can you do?
What we can do is we can work on some diaphragmic breathing. Like,
I love it. Sorry, go ahead.
Like blowing candles out, taking a deep full breath, expanding the full entire kind of use, getting deep into your lungs, like the belly breathing, outward breathing.
Are there any tools you can think of that can assist with your breathing?
What do you mean? Oh, well, you have the little respiratory, like little ball thingy.
Do you know what it's called?
No, I don't remember. So when you blow in, you're
yeah, that thing.
But like, you want to stay in the study, you want to spike it, you want to be duo.
The spirometer.
Yeah, there we go. But like, ultimately, this is going to be a group effort for children like this because they're not going to get better. Up front, it's a lot of education for the family of like what to expect as things progress. And then the goals, like you, what you talked about, is slowing it down, slowing the progression down. So it really is going to become a group effort within physical therapy, occupational therapy, and respiratory therapy. And then also doctors can treat with certain medication. There is absolutely no cure for it. There's some clinical studies that are going on from what I could tell, but nothing that changes the outcome.
Yeah.
So that, just keep in mind as you're training, like going forward with this patient. So like things that I would work on for like his his knee flexors, we'd be working on probably like active assist range of motion against gravity. We'd also be working on some resisted active range of motion as he's like on the table or something like that. That would kind of be hands-on. You could do a little bit of like, you could do some pain management, which really is not going to make a difference, honestly.
With like, my notes and kind of what I went through when I was reading it, there are a couple things you should absolutely avoid when working with muscular dystrophy. Did you find any by chance?
I was looking for them, and legit, out of all my books, it just says they just say it's there, but not what to avoid.
Oh, that there are.
Yeah.
they're almost like contraindications.
I know you can do like eSTEM with them.
eSTEM is fine.
Yeah,
eSTEM. I mean, I said I didn't find anything regarding eSTEM.
Yeah, no, I found things that showed like eSTEM is okay with them. What'd you find though?
That when you are doing exercises with them, to be almost as conservative as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you break down their muscle, it is not growing back.
Yeah.
Yes. You want to avoid high resistance.
Mm-hmm.
You want to avoid eccentrics, and you want to avoid overexertion.
Yeah.
Which
makes sense.
Yeah, if you break that down, it's just going to get replaced by the fat and the connective tissue. And
yeah, so
you're
like you
almost making it worse.
You want to strengthen, but not like tear the muscle down at the same time.
You want to maintain
what they've got,
as much functional ability and range of motion as they can.
Yeah.
Because we're not, at this point, we're not training. We're just maintaining range of motion.
Yeah, which is hard too, because like, honestly, you might run into this because it's considered more of a maintenance versus the gain. Some insurance won't cover it, like physical therapy.
Really?
Mm-hmm. So
hold on, say that again.
So because it's considered maintenance and there's no progression to bettering, some insurances will not cover it because they don't find any value in it.
But a patient like that has DMD, I would assume they would just be in a hospital for the extent of their care. practically.
Some of it. Yeah.
I don't really think a patient with DMD would go to an outpatient clinic.
Well, it depends. When they're younger, they could. At this point, this kid's 8 years old. He's still independent. My guess is he's probably on a sleep apnea machine. But, you know, it doesn't show that he's on any machine currently. If he's got parents who are willing to take care of him, like, they can still lead a functional life, usually up until they're about 10. And then after that, that's when things, like, you can still, you know, have a functional life in a wheelchair for a while. You can still have, you know, your oxygen hooked up to the wheelchair. So, like, they can still lead a functional life. It's harder when they get, you know, the more failure starts to happen within the respiratory and their heart. But it really depends on your support system, I guess you could say. So, like, I've seen it, for example, when I went through my observation hours before I even went to PTA school. This is when I was thinking about doing the DPT route. But I went and I observed in a inpatient facility for pediatric children. So the requirements were, at this facility, it was literally, they called it the worst of the worst kids. It was inpatient, of course. The requirements to be there is you had to have a trach, you had to have a feeding tube,
and it's just due to not having enough, like, volume space. Like, yeah. Why were they so picky with their
administration? Because the fact that it was like
the demand was so high, their rooms were always empty. Like, no rooms were ever empty.
Well, it wasn't so much that. It was just, like, their clinical or their staff is geared towards that. Like, it's harder to find actually placement for those kids, so they don't want to fill one like a spot up where that kid doesn't need that full care when that type of kid needs that full care. And then, like, you have to be under 18, of course.
I guess the way I'm thinking of it is, like, a patient comes in, it's like, oh, sorry, like, I know you're in rough shape, but you can't, like, you have a room open, but sorry, we can't see you because you're not this level of.
Well, they would usually just refer to a different facility. Like, they would just go to a different facility.
I guess if they have a backup.
Yeah. No. It's more like that facility was geared towards that because they had more, like, the staff that was geared towards kind of more of,
like, intensive care,
or in some cases, unfortunately, not
as intensive. Yeah, because as a parent, I'd be very frustrated.
So, like,
what do you mean you can't see my child?
Most of the kids that are actually were there were awarded to the state, meaning that they had complications as a baby and they were left. They just up and left. Parents up and left. And so the state technically takes over and cares for them. And that's where I saw actually a lot of muscular dystrophy. Duchenne's muscular dystrophy in that facility, because a lot of the kids, they were saying, were just up and left. And so because of that, like, these kids are on, like, the bare minimum, usually insurance and everything like that. And so certain times they will, like, as they start to get older. I think there was a 15-year-old, and I was talking to one of the PTs about it, and I asked about, like, well, why don't they do, like, certain things, like, continue to do stretching or get, you know, we haven't talked about it, but a lot of times braces and things like that are ordered for these kids. And I'm like, why aren't they doing that? They're like, well, they don't see any point in spending the money because of the fact that the kid's never going to get better. So they don't pay for maintenance. Now, granted, this was quite a few years ago, so it could have changed. That was just my experience with it, if that makes sense.
I mean, I feel like as long as it improves their quality of life, but
you would think, I mean, that's, like, what I said. I'm not saying I by any means agree with it, but it's just something that you might have to watch out for, because how many times, you know, in general for chronic pain, have we seen insurances like, yeah, nothing's changing.
See them for like 70 visits, and it's like, yeah, okay, obviously this isn't working.
Yeah, go back to the doctor. Now, granted, there is a chance that outcome could become better, but it's just something to keep in mind when working with these patients. You want to be efficient, but at the same time, you can't over push it, if that makes sense. So And then a lot of it's like educating the parents on what signs to look out for, you know, fall risk. Okay. If they fall in like one fall, you know, any of us can fall, but if they have another fall, consecutive falls, and they're just starting to see them get tired and weaker, okay, well then maybe it's time to start transferring them over to, you know, I'm blanking on the arm crutches. What are they actually called?
I don't remember.
Yeah, but you know what I'm talking about. Like, yeah. Transferring them over to that, because some of them will use that. Like, you don't sometimes want to go straight into, like, a walker or something like that. Like, if they still can do, like, a, you know.
Well, you want the least.
Yeah.
Least assistive device, mm-hmm. I guess,
so, like, in a way. For me, like, I would probably start off with the arm crutches. And then from there, I'd probably transfer into a walker. From a walker, unfortunately, most likely you'd be transferring into a wheelchair, and that is going. Well, then to
from happen. There, you still want a manual wheelchair,
mm-hmm.
and then most likely, eventually, you'll need a power wheelchair. Yeah. But still, try to maintain the highest level of function that you can.
Yeah.
For as and long as you can.
Educating on that, educating on things like some might have to have a feeding tube put in down the care of life, and other things like that too. So, like, it's a lot of educating, a lot of like watching the progression. With also muscular dystrophy, you want to be aware of any changes. So you do want to do manual muscle testing quite often, actually, more often than not with them, because changes can happen rapidly. Definitely as they get into that 10 to 12 range, from what I could tell in all of my research, that is kind of the biggest decline. Like a rapid decline is from what I could tell. So.
All right. Well, let's get back to John.
Oh, you named it?
I gave him a name.
Okay.
John, his last name is Doe.
Original. I literally think I just had the biggest eye roll I can.
I felt it from way over here. All right. For Mr. Doe. Mm-hmm. So how would you address his toe walking?
Stretching. So working on trying to get rid of some of those contractures. So stretching is a great one for them. A lot of passive range of motion too, like what we talked about, just keeping their joints mobile too, because of the fact that as their muscles begin to fill with, like what we said, that connective tissue and the fatty tissue, their range of motion can decrease too, and joint stiffness could come along. So like you want to make sure you're moving the joints and then contractures, and like we talked about, braces, like getting them, you know, maybe some night splints or
how aggressive would you go for the stretching though?
Not aggressive, because again, you don't want to tear those muscles or anything like that.
Okay, so you mentioned contractures.
Mm-hmm.
Would you do any low load long duration as far as It's on the lighter side because it's a longer amount of time.
I would probably.
Do you feel like that's appropriate for someone with DMD?
Yes.
Honestly, I don't know. Well, I'm generally curious.
I think the reason that I came to that conclusion is, A, like you were talking about, like I wouldn't put them into like a huge stretch and then leave them for long term in that. Like it would almost like slowly increase the stretch. Start with a very light stretch, like light, and then kind of start to stretch them out slowly and longer from that period. It's kind of the same thing as what they do with the bracing, like the night splints, for contractures.
Mm-hmm.
It's legit like the same thing. Is it's literally just stretching it for a longer period of time,
or almost preventing it from getting worse.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, but like you're still kind of, a lot of times you're stretching it slowly, very lightly, very small degrees. So like for me, I continue to do a lot of range of motion, even though like his range of motion for most of his lower extremity, is it lower and upper or just lower?
All of it.
So like, except for his hip flexion
and everything is,
or sorry, hip extension and dorsiflexion were fine. But like I would continue to even stretch that and do passive range of motion and active range of motion with it, just because of the fact that you don't, again, we're trying to stop the progression. So keeping that range of motion going is going to be good for maintenance.
Would you feel like giving him, let's say he's doing shoulder flexion, active range of motion, he goes from 170 to 150 mm-hmm. and over a couple weeks. Would you try to give him like a 1 pound weight to see if we can kind of regain back that range of motion?
Mm-mm. Not for a range of motion, no. Like, if his strength was still up there within the functional range of motion, then yeah. Like, if he was doing 1 pound weight and his range of motion just started to kind of go, and but he's still able to do the 1 pound weight, I'd keep the 1 pound weight within the range of motion. Like, I wouldn't try to force it out of the range of motion, if that makes sense.
Like, you wouldn't push it past its 150?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I wouldn't be like, okay, we have to get back up to 170. You're not going to get back up to 170. There's a lot. Like we said, we both have never actually physically treated this. I've been around it, which has been very helpful, and asked a lot of questions around it. It's a tough one because of the fact that I will say most of it is patient education and adapting as they unfortunately decline. But just make sure that, like, my biggest thing takeaway I would say is make sure you're discussing with occupational therapy, you're discussing with respiratory therapy, that you guys are planning appropriately to make sure that you're not overexerting the kid too, and discussing with the family to understand the education and the steps needed to move forward with it. But I think that's kind of like basis of what we're doing. I know we didn't get too much into like exercises, but I feel like
it's hard with this patient because you don't really exercise them.
Yeah, I think
you just maintain their functional level.
You maintain it, and then you just do like honestly a lot of like walking, stairs, like try to
functional activities.
Yeah, a lot of functional activities, and I think a lot of times you'd be doing more hands-on work with like, you know, stretching and some passive range of motion just to make sure things aren't getting too stiff. So,
that's my takeaways like that I want to point out.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like we hit kind of like the main points, bringing in different disciplines, maintaining like the cardio and respiratory people, kind of getting everybody involved. When they do get to the point when they're in a wheelchair, skin care becomes very mm-hmm. important. So making sure that they're still doing their pressure relief, skin inspections, things like that. And also for their gait or just for their activities of daily living. Maintaining safety first.
Yeah.
So a lot of these things you can't correct. Once they happen because we can't change them. And that's probably why we didn't really go into a lot of strength training or a lot of exercises, because you don't do that. So once you get their base level of function that day, that week, that month, just focus on keeping those activities safe.
Yeah, and one of the things we didn't even talk about, too, is, like, where cognitively this kid is. A lot of them will have some cognitive issues that are going on.
It's normal.
Yeah.
But you're right.
Yeah, so, like...
But John was normal.
Yeah, John, okay.
For his age.
But, like, it's just something to be aware of, because some of their mentality of, like, kind of developing decreases also as time goes on. So, like, you just have to be aware of those changes, too. And, you know, you're working with a kid. What kid's going to sit there and be super thrilled about doing certain things? You have to just
be... They're probably going to be there a lot, too. So
yeah. Clever about it, and educate and keep the spirits up. Let them have fun while they can, unfortunately.
Very unforgiving. Anyways.
But, yeah.
We'll wrap this episode up because it was longer than we anticipated. I feel like we touched on quite a few different things.
Yeah, we kind of dove into it a little bit more than I expected.
But anyways, thank you so much for listening if you made it this far.
Yeah.
I don't know if you...
Congrats on you, I guess.
You did get a little bounce with it too. Yeah.
Yeah. The whole body went to that. Yeah.
Anyways, yes. Thank you. Follow us on our social medias, Instagram, mm-hmm. Twitter, join the Facebook group. We are posting more questions.
We're back to posting some YouTube videos, so check them out.
Yeah, we're back to some YouTube videos. By the time this episode comes out, we should have released at least, hopefully, two, maybe three. So check those out.
Yep, and when you're searching for a slip for, like,
my whole mind just
the underscore PT underscore
assistance. Oh, yeah, we're trying to do that.
We're going to be a little more consistent, and we found that that's kind of the best way to do it. And then don't forget, guys, to share, like, follow, Give us your feedback. It's always helpful.
And I think for this one in particular, too, if anybody's treated a patient with TMD, yeah, like if anything we said that was completely wrong or somewhat on the right track,
point us out.
Let us know, because we would definitely love to learn more about TMD.
I want to make sure that we're trying to kind of give you the proper tools to figure this out, too, and like not lead you down a path that's wrong. You know, we're doing the best we can with the information that we're given, but life, real life experience is the best.
Irreplaceable.
Yeah. So like, send it our way. If you're like, yeah, you, I get where you guys are coming from, but you guys are on book and this is actually like what's done. So send it our way.
Let us know.
And we will catch you on the next one.
Take care.
Bye guys.
The information in this video or podcast is not intended nor implied to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. All content, including text, graphics, images, and information contained in this video or podcast, is for general information purposes only and does not replace your professors or a consultation from your own doctor or healthcare professional.